Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. And I'm looking out. It looks really pretty on the screen, but boy, when you look around, it has been storming all weekend long. And it looks like we've got some rain coming, but it's just great to have you with us tonight. And I want to tell you what, this is going to be one of those programs. First of all, it's a money-back guarantee. I know you didn't pay for any of this, but it's free tonight, but it's money-back guarantee tonight that this is going to be a life-changing, awesome program, and I am so excited. Even if I had the best dinner waiting for me off to the side, I would put that and let it get cold just to be able to talk to our guest tonight and spend a few minutes, because this is one of those you need to get on your phone right now and text a few people and say, hey, tune in, because you want to hear this live. I don't say that every week, but I'm saying it tonight. It's really, really going to be awesome. Great to have you with us tonight. Just want you to kind of be part of the program. I don't believe we have ever had this topic on our program in a year and a half, and I'm really excited about this, to be able to talk about the impact, the triumph that you can have over it, how it affects people, and how you use what you are dealing with and what you have gone through to be able to help other people later on in life. And I honestly believe that's why we get to go on these journeys, so we can actually help other people when they are experiencing something in their life that we have gone through, handle it, maybe not so right, maybe really right. We can be able to help them through it. That's what makes community and togetherness and friendship and love and caring and being kind to one another so important in our world. And to be honest with you, and we're going to talk about this with our guests. I won't even go into that. We'll talk about that when she's actually here. But let's see. I believe next week we have Jean Pagliara, an author that I'm getting ready to read her book, and I'm looking forward to Jean being here next week on May 30th. And then the first week in June, we have Sherry White, and she's going to be a great guest. That'll be the first Sunday night in June, and believe it or not, we're about halfway through 2021. So it's just time's flying. But the whole month of June, we have some great guests. So thanks for being here tonight. We would love for you to be involved tonight, and our guest has agreed to be able to take calls. I'm looking right over here on this computer to my side that we are live on the Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. My wonderful son, Curtis, is there watching that page for your comments, questions, or you can actually call straight into the most wonderful radio station in the country, BBS Radio at 888-627-6008. And Chris will patch you right through to us, and we'll say howdy, and you'll be live right online with us tonight. So we would love for you to do that. But tonight, normally I have some fluff, but I want to get straight to the game because this is going to be an awesome 55 minutes. Published author, speaker, podcaster, content producer, and founder of Madness to Magic. And boy, we're going to find out about that. Paulina Milana's mission is to share stories and celebrate the triumph, and listen to this, of the human spirit and the power that lies within each and every one of us to bring about change for the better. It can make you bitter or it can make you better. And she always has a way of being able to figure out and help us be able to become better. Her professional background includes telling other people's stories, both as a journalist and as a PR and digital media marketing executive. She just not says this stuff. She lives this stuff. She currently serves as a court-appointed special advocate for children in foster care as an empowering writing coach who uses storytelling to help people reimagine their lives, write their next chapters, and become the heroes of their own journeys. And I don't know if you saw the poster that we broadcast all around the world that we made this week of her picture and the shadow being a superhero. It's just absolutely awesome. Paulina's first book, The S Word, was written about 6 years ago. I think 6 years ago to this month, back in 2015. And she earned a National Indie Excellence Award. The sequel that I finished through the second time this afternoon, Committed, a memoir of madness in the family, came out this month. And I guess I bought it online. So it's available now for your purchase. And there's the book that I bought before that I've really enjoyed. It's kind of like a cartoon book for adults. Seriously, Are We There Yet? And that's the first children's book for adults, and that is wonderful. And she has a podcast called I'm With Crazy, a love story, and it's on iTunes, and you can listen to that. I don't know what night that comes on, but it's archived all the time, so you can just go in and listen to the past shows. And one thing that I really, really, we're going to talk about it, loved about her writing is she goes back to her culture, her background, her upbringing from being Sicilian and me being Italian and loving. If anybody said if you could only have one movie in a prison cell for the rest of your life, what would it be? I'd say, well, can we make it three? How about all the Godfathers? I just love those movies. And she was born and raised in Chicago. She's married and now lives on the edge of the Angeles National Forest, all the way out there, with BBS Radio in Southern California. And we're going to let you know a little bit later how to get in touch with her and how to get on her website and find out so much about her. But welcome to our program tonight, Paulina Milana. Paulina, are you there? Can you hear us?
I am here. Can you hear me? Hello.
It's great to see you. It is just an absolute honor to have you with the program tonight. I appreciate you being here.
Oh, my goodness. Your entire introduction, here's what I want to do. I want to put you in my pocket and keep you with me all the time, because that was so inspiring to me. I have to really thank you.
Well, I tell you, there's sometimes you have to pretend like you're really excited to have somebody on, and you know, I just hope I can make it through the hour without falling asleep. But boy, I've been waiting for this one. And after reading the book, every page, there's a line that goes, oh, I want to ask her about that. I want to ask her about that. So I'm really excited to have you on the program. Is the book Committed out right now so everybody can get it?
It is out. It came out May 4. So it's only been a few weeks, but it's doing really well. And the reviews have been so humbling. So just makes your heart swell that you're actually doing something that can help other people.
You know, reviews on Amazon, on any place, Goodreads or whatever, are almost impossible to get unless you are really, you know, selling millions of books. But I really recommend everybody that's listening to this program tonight, buy the book, download it off Kindle right now so you can read it tonight before you go to sleep, at least start it. And then when you're done, please go in and review it. And I promise you, before I fall asleep in my chair this evening, I will do a review for you. And it's 5-star. And if I could make it 7-star, I would. But 5 is most they give you on Amazon. But I really appreciate Committed. It was awesome reading.
Thank you. Thank you.
I haven't read the S word, but I'm going to read that next week. I hope I have time to squeeze that in. Okay. But in the first book, in this book, in Committed, you start off in 1985. Mm-hmm. And I love the way you write. I feel like I'm in the dorm room with you. You tell me the color of the walls. And I always love this because when I'm talking to writers, I always go, hey, no, wait, when you journal, I want to know what it smells like, mm-hmm. what it feels like, what the drapes look like, what the carpet looks like, how did the bed sheets feel, what color were they, everything. And you do that so vividly. And I loved, I stopped and chuckled when you said you were in there with your Gloria Vanderbilt jeans. I thought, yes, I remember the Calvin Klein jeans in the 80s and the Gloria Vanderbilts. Everybody had those. So I felt like I was right there in the dorm room. It was just awesome.
Well, Lord help you if you were in that dorm room. It was a kitchenette. So I had signed up just a little too late, and that's where I ended up with the sink and the household products. So it's funny.
When you went to college, because I want to end up backtracking to if nobody really knows about you and your life. But let's just hit this, and then we'll go backwards a little bit. Why was that first year of college so important and meaningful to you? Was that your first opportunity for freedom?
Yeah. That's a great question. So my entire life, from really the time I was about 10 years old, I became the caregiver because my mother was so ill. She was a diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic. At that time, nobody knew really what it was. My mom, we went to the doctors. The doctors thought it was physical and they wanted to cut it out. So my mother actually had a couple of exploratory brain surgeries until they realized it wasn't that. But during that whole time, I took over some of the duties. My parents, both from Sicily, so English, not first language. I became translator, facilitator. My father would call me la piccola mamma, which means the little mother. My whole existence was really dedicated to the family, especially being female, being Sicilian. When I went through what we went through with my mom, and just to kind of give you some tidbits of what that was, because she went undiagnosed for so long, she became pretty rageful and pretty scary. So at nighttime, she would stay up. She would scream and at nothing we could see, but clearly she saw it. She would keep baseball bats, knives under the bed, threatening my dad. She would threaten to blow us up. It was very, very scary. And so we would go through that at night. And then the very next morning, we'd have to get up and go to school as if nothing was wrong. And because we were Sicilian and because of the stigma of mental illness, we lived by this unwritten code of La Cosa Nostra, whatever happens in the family stays in the family, right? And so growing up, it was suffocating. You didn't know which way to turn because no one wanted to talk about it. No one was talking about it. The only thing that you saw on TV about it were movies like, do you remember the movie Sybil with the, right? So it was something to be feared. If you saw something on TV, a shooting, whatever it was, immediately they went to the person had mental illness. They'd point to the family and say, well, why didn't you know? Why didn't you do something? So we kept it all quiet. By the time I was a junior in college, I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't take it anymore. And I knew that if I didn't get out, I was going to perish or something was going to happen. I just felt it in me. I got this opportunity to go away to college. I only had enough money for 1 year. I went to Iowa State University, great college. And in that year, all I wanted was to be normal. All I wanted was to be just concerned with myself, you know, a normal kid. And yet during that entire year, letters from home would come. And so this memoir, this Committed, is told, it's an epistolary memoir. So it's told with the actual letters in it. And those letters just kept dragging me back. And I couldn't, no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't divorce myself from the madness at home. So that year was super important. And even though I kept being influenced by whatever was going on at home during that year, that was the year that I met powerful women that I could model after. I met my writing instructor, the very first one who said to me, "Hey, I don't say this to too many people, but you were born to write. I hope that's something that you do." I met friends who they didn't know anything about my home life, and so it was just easy to just be like them, normal. So for 1 year, I did get away. It did save me for that period. And it just gave me hope that I could become something greater than even I could imagine. So
how close were you, Paulina, to being at the breaking point before this year came into your life? Was you at that point of going, wait, I can't do it another day? How close were you?
Well, here, this will give you a sense. So for the first couple of years of college, I had offers. I had an offer to study in Italy for free, a full ride, and I couldn't do it. Why? Because I didn't want to leave my father, especially. I didn't want to leave the family. So bottling that up, not having anybody know really what was going on, having to deal with my mom, you know, my mom was super talented. She was commissioned by Pucci, the famous designer, to come to America from Italy because of her talent in being a seamstress, a designer. She was incredibly intelligent, which in many ways probably made it more challenging because she was able to hide things from others. But my mother also had something in her mind that I was kind of promiscuous, that I was the bad seed, that I had to be, you know, disciplined. So it was a challenge to be with her. It was a challenge because all I saw was a scary mom who didn't necessarily like me, or and I kept her at arm's distance. There comes a point where you just, your circumstances become so weighty that you cannot see your way out. And at that point in my life, I remember coming home and my mom was actually in one of her rages and was beating on my little sister. There was a reason for it, and I don't mean to excuse it, right? But there was a reason for it. My little sister, there were some things going on at school, and my mom found out about it. Not that it was my little sister's fault at all, but it was very important to not let the outside world know that we were anything less than normal or even perfect, right? So when I came home and I saw her doing that, I had gotten offers from colleges. I just never paid attention to them. I just decided enough is enough. And I was going, and that was it. And it really, just even making that decision, knowing that I was, for the first time, possibly putting myself first, something in me just was allowed to breathe. I could focus on that light at the end of the tunnel, getting out. And even though, you know, it was just 1 year, I actually used that throughout my life because I was like, okay, I'll just give myself a year. Okay, we'll just do a year, one more year. And it made things digestible for me to kind of handle it.
Wow. Tell you what, we're going to take our first break. On the other side of this break, I really want to find out what your child life looked like on a typical week. And there's a couple quotes that I want to read to you, and I want to really look in your eyes and say, hey, what's that really mean? Because I think there's a lot of meat on that bone, and it's just a few words in a sentence on a with ink on a page. But boy, I think there's a whole lot to talk about in just a few of these quotes that you wrote in your book. So if you want to get involved, 888-627-6008, we would love for you to be able to get involved in the conversation. If you have things happening at your home that you've been told, hey, what happens in this home stays in this home, and you've had some kind of experiences like this and you just want to share, if you want to pick her brain for advice, get online, Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page, or call us at 888-627-6008. And we'll be right back after this first commercial break with more Breaking Silence. Be right back. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. All right, welcome back. We have a wonderful guest tonight, Paulina Milana, and she has written an awesome book called Committed. And I recommend everybody get on Amazon right now, even before we get off the show tonight, and go ahead and order it, buy it, so it's waiting for you when you get off the program this evening. You can start reading, because I guarantee you the first chapter, you're going to go, wow, I can't wait to keep reading. And it's one of those you can't put down books. So I just appreciate it. There was a line that when I read it, I thought, okay, now wait, that's something that I want to ask you about. And it goes like this. I believe it was in the first chapter too, that you had already twice as many years worth of living already in you at the age of 20. I don't know if a lot of people that haven't gone through trauma in their life understands what that means, but what does that mean to you that you had twice as many years worth of living already?
So for me, what it meant was from, you know, usually if you're a 10-year-old kid, you are a kid, right? Yeah. You don't have these kinds of responsibilities. And with me, from that age, all throughout my life at that point, they just kept building all of my responsibilities. I was taking on things that adults, seasoned adults, didn't have to take on. And there were a lot of situations where you're kind of straddling childhood, because you are a child, but adulthood because of everything you're doing. And I will never forget, I was in the fourth grade, and my teacher had wanted us to do something. I can't even remember exactly what it was, but I knew that I couldn't deliver. And I wasn't even going to be in class the next day. And I was super worried because everybody had a time slot. I remember as a kid, fourth grade, finding her phone number in those days in the phone book, calling her up at home and acting as myself, but really acting as my mom, saying, you know what, I know she has this thing tomorrow, but we have something else that we cannot, forego. She won't be in class. I remember my teacher on the phone being very kind of shocked that a fourth grader is kind of talking to her as an adult. And then the next day in class, she dressed me down and said, "You are never to do that again. How dare!" Like, it was a horrible moment. And I bring this up. She's a lovely, lovely woman, great teacher. Nothing against her, but I bring this up because when you are a caregiver kid, really, and when you're dealing with mental illness in the family, there you are playing dual roles, and you never know which one you're supposed to be. Are you supposed to be the kid? Are you supposed to be the adult? And for me, it just, I was exhausted. I felt as if I had lived at least twice as many years. And I know that even friends who didn't know anything, but when the first book came out, they came to the book launch parties. They actually said to me, "You know, my mom said you were very fast, a very fast girl." And what's sad about that, I wasn't fast in the typical kind of, you know, sexual kind of way. I was acting as an adult. And it was, to me, it was normal on that side of what I had to do, but not to the outside world, because you are, age-wise, you're a child. So that's what it meant.
With your siblings, how many siblings did you have?
I have three siblings. One of them, so I have an older sister, and then there's my older brother. Then there's me, so I'm the middle girl. And then there's my little sister who has passed away. She's the one who also was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia.
Do you recall if in the history of your family, was there any of this in generations before?
Oh, yeah.
Was there?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I was in high school and everything was exploding with my mom, the doctors said to us, it's not hereditary at that time. It's not hereditary. You know, that's kind of just what they kept saying. And I thought, something doesn't make sense here, because then I started to remember the stories that my mom would tell us about her side of the family, and just some things that you always thought were kind of superstitious Sicilian kind of stuff. But now, hindsight 2020, I realize it wasn't just, you know, fantastical stories. There was mental illness symptoms all throughout on her side of the family. So later on, I found out that schizophrenia, while it's not technically hereditary, children of schizophrenics are between, I think it's the stat is 25 to 50% more likely to develop it. In our case, it was kind of strange, because while my little sister was diagnosed in her 20s, and schizophrenia manifests in your 20s, my mother wasn't diagnosed until late 40s, early 50s, which was unusual. And they don't know if she was just so intelligent she could hide it, you know, like the guy from the Beautiful Mind movie, yeah. Or if it came out because it was triggered by something. We don't know, but definitely it runs in the family.
How much of your childhood did you have to give up of not being able to be a child? Do you think you've lost majority of it?
You know, probably part of the reason why my mom kind of, and I don't mean to use the term came after me, but I was a bit of a target for her, I think, was because I was just one of those kids who loved to goof around, laugh, play. I remember I had super long hair, just like almost down to my knees, and beautiful curly hair. But I loved to play all hours of the day, the night, and upside down, like on swing sets. My hair would be filthy. And my father at that time was a barber. And I came home one day and he had me sit in the chair, and no discussion, no nothing. He just chopped off my hair super short. And you really weren't allowed to say much back then. But childhood, I had wonderful memories of childhood coinciding with the very not wonderful memories of childhood. I think part of the beauty of being a kid is you're so resilient. You live in the moment. So you just kind of go with the flow. And honestly, who knew any different? I at that point, that young, I really didn't know that anybody else was living any other way. I just thought that was the way it was, right? I mean, you'll appreciate this being Italian. So for us, you know, Easter is a holiday, big deal, right? And my parents were incredible cooks from two different regions in Sicily. And you'd come home. I mean, you'd wake up in the morning on Easter morning and there'd be this incredible aroma because they had already started cooking. And then you'd open up like the oven and there'd be like a goat's head. And my mom loved to eat the eyes. Like, it's just weird, right? But it's normal in certain parts of Sicily. It's a delicacy. So in those days, I didn't really think anything was anything really out of the ordinary in the beginning that anybody else was experiencing. So yeah, we even had, I don't know if you remember the Jerry Lewis telethons.
Oh, absolutely. Remember that? Labor Day weekend. Oh, yes.
And so we put on a carnival. There was a show called Dark Shadows that we used to watch, as children, which today, I don't know, I don't think that would fly, but we put on like a play about it. There were great moments, and I actually credit a lot of that to my father because he just had such a love of life and a sense of humor, and he's the one who could find the magic regardless of the madness. He actually once said to me, not once, many times, but he would say that a captain of a ship, his leadership qualities are not seen when the sea is calm, rather when the sea is tempestuous, right? That's when you really see what that person's made of. And for my dad, you know, a lot of people, they abandon their families, right? They divorce, they do whatever. He didn't. He stuck with it. And credit to my mother too, because a lot of people we see who have a severe mental illness, they sometimes harm their children. And my mother later on in life had said that the reason she would take us for walks when we were little was because she was trying to run away from the voices telling her to kill us. So she had the strength to do that. So I honor her for a lot of things that back then I could not have known.
Talking about your dad, because I just want to show you that I did read the book. there's some paragraphs about the day that you saw your dad break.
Oh yeah.
When he was the human GPS or something like that. And yeah. He started going and all of a sudden it wasn't there. He didn't know where he was at. No. How hard was that to deal with as the child caregiver of all those years?
Yeah. That moment, even today, like talking about it, it brings up all those emotions because I always knew my dad was strong and he was the one who could find our way out of the darkness, right? He was the human GPS, never got lost. That moment, my mother, we had committed her to a psych ward. And when you put someone in, it still holds true today, they have that holding period where you can't see them, right? So for back then, I think it was like 2 weeks. And when we were allowed to see her, we went into the hospital. And magically, she had escaped. And no one knew how it happened. We were dumbfounded because she didn't drive. She didn't really speak the language. It was my mother's brilliance, to be quite honest, how she figured it out. Well, when we went to go look for her, I just remember looking and seeing the same houses, the same car, the same houses, the same just environment, and thinking to myself, wait, what are we doing here? And when my father asked us, bambini, ma dove siamo, which is kids, where are we? And I knew he was lost. It broke me. I, for the first time, bawled. And then my older sister said to me, gosh, I've never seen you cry. I thought you were a robot. which just tells you what my role was in the family. But I knew at that moment that light, that beam of hope that I had in my father had disintegrated in many ways. And that made me super fearful, because at that moment I thought to myself, I'm so in this on my own. Like I can't even bother him with my own challenges because he's losing it. Right. So yeah, that was that memory, is not a good one.
It wasn't just about a loss of direction. It was like a loss in how am I going to get through this?
Right.
The whole situation.
Right. The whole situation.
That's powerful. That's powerful. Yeah. There was another one. Oh, I wrote this down. One moment would be perfectly normal, and then the next second, crazy would come for a quick visit, or it could last for a long time, I think was the way you put that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Explain that.
Wow. So that was kind of everyday life. I mean, you always were waiting for that other shoe to drop. Like, what was going to happen? Who was coming today to the table? Right. Was it mom, like a normal mom kind of thing? Or was it mom, like, the scary mom? So here, an example, we were all having dinner, and I remember, as children, we had vino for dinner. We didn't have milk. We had vino, and then they'd mix it with a little 7-Up, our own wine spritzers. And I remember I was taking a sip, and everything was totally just, we were eating dinner. And suddenly my mom says something to my father, where my father was punishing my brother. And it escalated to the point where my wine glass, or my glass, everything in it, just splattered all over. I had been wearing glasses, and so they were all like now covered with kind of red gunk, right? And my mother and father had a bit of a battle that ended up, I really thought at that point that either he was going to kill her or she was going to kill him. And she had scratched up his face terribly. Luckily, they broke, and he went to work the next day and had to tell everybody that we had gotten a cat and that it scratched his face. It's just, but that happened. And when he came home the next day, everything was fine. And I really believe, and I believe this with my whole heart, even today, everyone is doing the best they can in that given situation with what they have. I'm not excusing it. I'm not saying that things are right or wrong. I'm just saying, even with my mom, she knew, I mean, from the letters in the book, she knew that, that something was so wrong with her. And she had written letters saying goodbye to us because she thought it would be better if she just left. I mean, how do you, especially as a kid, deal with stuff like that? You do the best you can. You just one foot in front of the other. And then as you age, as you get more wisdom, as you learn the ropes, let's just call it, you either, as you said before, you can let it make you bitter or better, right? It can influence you and take you higher. You can use that to leverage and help other people, or you can let it hurt even your future. And that's not something I was willing to do.
We're going to take our last break. And on the other side of this break, I want to kind of turn the corner, Helena, to find out what your passion is now, what motivates you to write these stories that are painful. I know when you start going back and digging in, and especially when you're in a culture, I would imagine the Sicilian culture, is even more closed than the post-World War II culture of just, hey, we don't talk about things that, you know, outside of our home. I would imagine Sicilians was even more absolutely it stays in the family or else. Right. And how you've taken this to motivate your next chapter and really what you want to be able to do. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of this break, we're going to also talk about what would you say to people if they call in or they're answering. I'm looking at my cell phone. I got several texts that I'll read during the break. How can people, if they're in the middle of it right now, what kind of advice do you have for them? We'll be right back after our last commercial break for the final segment of Breaking the Silence. Don't leave us. Be right back.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back. I honestly wish we were in the olden days of when we first started this program that I could keep on going for an additional hour, because honestly, Paulina, I could talk to you all night because there's so much stuff that I really want to kind of dig into. If you had all your books laying out, which one are you the most proud of? Which is the one that you go, that's the one that I put my heart and soul in, and I go back and go, oh, I did good.
So actually that's sort of like asking which star in the heavens is your favorite, right? Or, you know, I will say that every single book has just been a piece of my soul put onto paper. And every single one of them has, whether it's, so you brought up Seriously, Are We There Yet? So that's the children's book for adults, right? And basically it's to do away with the coulda, woulda, shouldas. And that one I did with my husband and then an illustrator who became a partner, awesome girl, Whitney Horton. That book, as much as it's just a 32-page picture book, has a lot of little life lessons in it. Yeah. I wrote a fiction novel, a Christmas story called Miracle on Mall Drive, that actually part of it happened when I was a reporter, and I fictionalized it. In that story, some of the characters, and now I'm going to sound a little bit cuckoo, but some of the characters, just they're the ones who told me what they would say, what they would do, there were times I was typing and they'd be like, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't do that. So, and those characters brought in a lot of pieces of my life that I was then able to kind of split into the different characters, right? So there is someone in that story who has a mental illness. There is someone who, the brother of the person who has a mental illness. So all of my stories mean a great deal to me. I think this one, Committed, I love it so much because using the actual letters of the people who are not here to tell their side of the tale, really that made it possible for me to give them a voice. And I loved how it came out. I already have a couple of books like in my head on what's coming next. So I, at my core, am a writer. I'm a storyteller. And I'm just trying to live out what I believe is my purpose here on this planet. And I'm glad that people like you actually like it enough to talk to me. How's that?
It's great. And you know, the I've bought it, but I haven't read the first book. And it really wasn't necessary because I thought, oh, maybe I ought to go back and read it first. But I asked Kim, we were talking, I said, hey, Kim, which book are we wanting, you know, this out that's getting ready to be released? And she said, Committed. So, okay, I want to make sure I read that one then. And it stands alone. These are all standalone books. Mm-hmm. And now it has me interested. I want to go back and get the S word. Mm-hmm. Is there a reason? And I noticed it, but then in the back of the book, it asked the question, what's the deal with all the C's?
So the first book is the S word, right? And okay. When people hear that, the S word, they naturally kind of think about sex, right? Oh, it's about sex, right? In that first book, it wasn't just about sex. It was about being Sicilian. It was about schizophrenia, right? It was about sexual awareness. There were a lot of things that had happened even on that realm. I think you'll find that part of the book kind of fascinating. So the point for that book, just as this one, is that everybody thinks it's just about one thing. Oh, okay. Oh, so it's schizophrenia. No, it's everything. Everything is influenced by everything else. So the C word, originally the book was going to be called the C word. I actually had it in my mind that I was going to do a series and they were all going to spell out schizophrenia. So it was going to be the S word, the C word, the H word, right? But then a very smart publisher from She Writes Press, Brooke Warner, she convinced me that there was a better title. And she's the one who actually came up with the title of Committed. And then each chapter is a C word of my life. Some of it catastrophic, right? A C word. And some of it as simple as cannoli. Like it's not, you know, we keep trying to pigeonhole things. We keep trying to make things black and white. And life just isn't that.
There's a lot of meat on that bone. because it's not.
It's not.
I think, do you think the stigma of mental illness has changed this past year more than it ever has in our lifetime because of what this pandemic has done? And now everybody's doing stories on it, which I think sometimes is overkill.
Right.
But it does have our eyes opened. Yeah. What's your intake on your outlook on what the stigma is now compared to what it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago?
So I applaud the fact that there are more TV shows out there, right? More media celebrities. So, for example, I love how Shameless has handled it. I love how Netflix has a series from the New York Times called Modern Love. And one of their episodes with Anne Hathaway has to do with bipolar, and it's brilliant. Oprah Winfrey and Prince Harry, they actually have a Apple TV kind of documentary thing going on. I applaud all of that. What I recently realized is that as much as there's this movement to end the stigma, I don't think there's a lot of priority focus put on it as it should be, unless you're touched by it. Even Oprah had posted something about, and I can't remember exactly the story, but she took a kid on who had such terrible PTSD. And only when she was part of that, did she realize what it meant. I have a friend who just these past couple of months, for the first time, and this is a friend who was with me when we were in grammar school, just for the very first time, her own daughter had to be committed. It just kind of snowballed, exploded. She had no idea what to do. She had no idea of what the services were. So she came to me. I feel as if, yes, it is getting better. Yes, there are so many people trying to end the stigma and break the silence like you and actually have people talk and change the narrative, I still think it is closeted. I mean, look, put it this way. When you're in a job and someone dies in your family, a loved one, your pet, what do? They give you maybe 3 days to get over it. There isn't, you're just not allowed to show those emotions. As much as people say, you know what, it's okay to kind of come out and talk about it, there still is that fear. There's that fear of, I don't want a lot of people to know. I don't know how I'll be perceived. I don't know the questions. I don't know. They just rather kind of silence it. And my whole point is, silence is the very thing that suffocates. Yeah, that's exactly right. So, and
you know, I believe we have a whole line of police officers, EMTs, even surgeons and nurses and people that in ERs that deal with this every day.
Every day.
And they're expected to come back. And we talk about it. Oh, they can go to a room and talk about it, or here's some advice, here's a pamphlet. But I don't think there's enough shoe leather on it to where, hey, wait, let's stop. Everybody take a breath.
Right.
And let's get help.
Absolutely.
We only have a minute or two left. What would you say to somebody that's right in the middle of what you were going through as a child, and they're right in the middle of it right now? Mm-hmm. What would you say, hey, this is what you need? Mm-hmm. To be able to get through it. This is your advice of having to see it on the other side and all the way through it. Mm-hmm. What could they do that would be the best pill they can take emotionally for them right now?
I think the big word, self-care, and whatever that means for the person. Sometimes self-care can be just, you know, because you don't want to tell a lot of people, you want to maybe write in a journal. You've got to get that out. You've got to vomit it out, whatever those feelings are. Find a friend, a trusted friend that you can actually talk to. I think this fear kind of what it is, and this fear of telling people. As a CASA, I've been in court, and there was this little family. It was pretty clear that the mom was mentally ill. The judge was telling the father he had to be back in court, and the father turned to him and said, I don't think I can do that. And the judge said, I don't think you realize how serious this is. And the guy turned to the judge and said, I don't think you understand. If I don't go to work, they don't eat. We're out of a house. I think anytime we see something that seems a little off, say something, ask the question, are you okay? Do you need to talk to somebody? And you yourself, when you're experiencing a low moment, it's okay to say, hey, I'm not feeling that great. I'm not feeling okay. And the more that you resist it, the more it's going to persist.
Excellent words. I tell you what, they tell me we got about 30 seconds. If somebody wants to get in contact with you or find out more about you, throw that out, Paulina, so they have that and they can write it down and get in touch.
You can find me on madnesstomagic.com. All the information is there, even my email. I welcome it. I'm Google me. You'll find me everywhere pretty much lately.
And if they want to see or hear your podcast, it would be?
If they look for Madness to Magic, Madness to Magic, and then I'm with Crazy, a Love Story.
Okay, that's great. Well, thank you so much. This hour just flew by. Talk to you. I'd love to have you back on if you would agree to that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Everybody get online right now and buy Committed. And on Amazon, and I'm going to be reading the S word this week. So thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much. Time. Yeah, we'll look forward to it again. Okay, all right.
Thank you. As we do every week, I always like to just close out because I always want to let you know, no matter what you're going through, no matter what you've been through, no matter what you are involved in right now, no matter what you're going to face tomorrow, everybody lean in, everybody listen, take a breath. There's hope. There's hope. I promise you. Join us right here next week, 8 p.m. Central, for the most beautiful city in the country, Houston, Texas, for another edition of Breaking the Silence. Now, get on Amazon and buy Committed. You won't regret it. It's a great read. God bless. Have an awesome week. We'll talk soon. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.